Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and this Saturday is a big day. Not only is it Earth Day, but it's the March for Science. The March for Science is a celebration of science. It's not only about the scientists, but the very real role that science plays in each of our lives and the need to respect and encourage research that gives us insight into the world. So buckle up as we're about to explore this important topic and learn more about the March. We have two distinguished guests with us today, Dr. Grant Yamashita, as well as Dr. Helen Spafford. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
So Helen, tell us a little bit about your role with the March for Science and a little bit about your background to start.
Okay, so I'm actually the lead organizer for the March for Science, and we have quite a large group of people on the organizing committee now. There's probably over 40 of us that have committed to working on the March. And my day job is actually as an entomologist and professor at the University of Hawaii, Manoa, in the Department of Plant and Environmental Protection Sciences.
Excellent. And Grant, how about you? What's your role with the March, and where do you reside in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, I'm an evolutionary biologist by training. With the March itself, I'm the program coordinator, so I've been in charge of sort of the activities and the speakers and all of those things. I do consulting work now. I've just been here for about 5 years from living 20 years on the mainland. So doing biology and other sorts of fun things, I guess.
Excellent. So we're well represented within the sciences today. So how did you first get involved with the March, and what made you want to participate?
So when I first heard about the March for Science, and this was the one that was being started in Washington, D.C., I started following them on Twitter and trying to connect with somebody through the National March to see what was happening here in Hawaii. And actually, Grant and I connected through Twitter. We had never met before, and both of us were asking the same question, you know, what's happening in Hawaii? And so we said, well, okay, let's try organize something. And then we connected with other people who were asking the same question. Sure. And it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah.
I love that. It's more of a organic movement.
Mm-hmm. Very. Yeah.
That's great. So for people who haven't heard about the March for Science, let's go back to the beginning. How did it start, I guess, in D.C.? And what is it really about?
So the March for Science is really about promoting the value of science in our society and advocating for science and bringing people together to demonstrate that we value science. We value the outputs of science. We value the information that science generates, and we value the tools that we get as a result of the scientific process. And we want that to continue to be supported both culturally and at the government level.
Absolutely. And so, Grant, why is this March so important for Hawaii and for the rest of the world?
I think there are a number of reasons. I think one is sort of a lot of it has to do with the funding of science. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, in some of the administrations around the world nowadays, it's sort of relegating science to more of a second-class citizen in some areas. And I think funding has a lot to do with that. Science is, I guess, it hasn't been communicated as well as I think a lot of scientists wish it had been. And I think that's something that's really coming to the forefront nowadays.
Now, the funding issue you mentioned, for those of us who work in science, are all too familiar with the continued budget cuts that come down through a variety of the sciences, not just marine science in particular, but across the board. But for those people that aren't working in science, they may not be familiar with the funding cuts and how much that affects the type of research that gets done. Do you Have you personally been affected by this or know people that are affected by funding cuts and are concerned about it?
Well, absolutely. I haven't directly been affected by the funding cuts, but certainly there are those that I know that have. I have a lot of collaborations with scientists in federal agencies and as well as state agencies. And in addition, I apply for my own research funds from federal and state sources. So the kind of research that I'm able to do and my collaborators are able to do that helps everybody in our society, it's public good kind of research that when those programs get cut for whatever reason, our capacity to actually generate information and generate solutions is reduced.
It's really interesting to me, too, because it's not just about the funding, but recognition and appreciation for what the sciences do for our day-to-day lives. And I had a friend on social media who posed the question, do you know a scientist? And, you know, to me, that was laughable because I surround myself with scientists. I work in the science community. My friends and family are all science-oriented. But when you don't know people, when you talk to people outside of the science world, there are people that can't name a scientist at all and don't really know what they do. How do you respond to that group of people?
Yeah, I just read something this morning, actually, that I guess shocked me, but maybe it's not as shocking, that 70% of Americans cannot name a living scientist. And that just tells you, I think that just tells at least me that we haven't been that good at engaging with the public.
And the other aspect of it is, too, it may be that they actually do know a scientist. They know a person down the street. Sure. But, you know, but it, as Grant mentioned, you know, the scientific community hasn't really reached out as well outside of the scientific community. And we need to do that better.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of the controversy around the science is, you know, should scientists just focus on science, or should they be political, or should they advocate for their science? And this march in particular has sort of been a cornerstone of that debate a little bit of whether scientists should involve themselves in politics or should science be political. How do you address that question?
So there has been a lot of discussion about how political scientists should be. We're looking at it as from the standpoint of, well, We believe that scientists should communicate their research. They should be free to communicate and advocate for their findings. But the march itself, at least the march in Hawaii, is really about bringing people together to show support and advocacy for science. It's not so much about making a statement about any one political event or policy or any of that. It's really about showing support for the scientific process and the value of science overall.
Absolutely. So then the march itself, it's taking place on Earth Day. Was that done intentional? And are there any crossover events? Or tell us a little bit about the march itself here in Hawaii.
Okay, so the selection of the date, Earth Day, April 22nd, occurred at the national level. And as a consequence of that choice, most of the other satellite marches that are happening around the world are also occurring on Earth Day, and we just followed suit. In Hawaii itself, there are four events. There's one in Honolulu, there's one in Hilo, Hawaii, and there's one in Maui and Kauai. The event in Hilo, actually, there are two events. One is on the 21st, so the night before Earth Day, and then they are marching also in the Merry Monarch Parade on Earth Day.
Oh, great.
So if anyone is interested in information about any of those marches, where they are, when they are, you can find all of that on our website.
Excellent. Now, what is the march? Where is the march going here in Honolulu, and what exactly does it entail? Are there other activities surrounding the march?
Yeah, so we're going to... most of the march will convene at the University of Hawaii in Manoa, at the Bachman Lawn at the corner of University and Dole. And the march itself will go down University, down King Street, up Baratania, back to the University. We'll have a detailed map on the website about what the route will be. And the march isn't just going to be a march. We will have speakers. We will have activities, informational tables from various organizations, some music. So it will be not just, you know, people walking and that'll be it. You know, there's going to be a lot of informational things out there as well for people to get engaged with.
And fun things too, face painting and opportunities for people to mix and mingle. And we're hoping to get some food trucks as well. And so it really is about celebrating science.
And to address one of the earlier things that we talked about, we'll have a place where people can actually meet a real scientist.
Yeah. So we've got a meet the scientist table being set up. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love that. That's such a great idea. And you mentioned speakers. Is there going to be any particular speakers? And what time does the actual march take place?
So we have a program of speakers. And again, as that's finalized, we'll post that on our website. The rally where we'll have the speakers, that will begin at 3 p.m. on the Bachman Lawn. And the march itself will begin shortly after 4 p.m.
And so how can people get involved if they want to march, or are you looking for volunteers as well?
Absolutely. We are looking for volunteers. None of these types of events occurs without help of people in the community. So, if you go to our website, there is a volunteer link and people can sign up. And other than that, we really just want to encourage anyone who values that cell phone that they carry around, or when they turn on a light switch and they think, gee, you know, how did that happen? Well, the science behind that made that happen. Anyone who values those kinds of things should show up at the march and show their support for science.
So basically the entire population of Honolulu should be there.
That would be fine. If we can fit them all, that's another issue. But yeah.
I think one of the things we came up against when we were planning the march was because it's Earth Day, you know, there are a lot of really great events going on throughout the day at the zoo down in Waikiki at the aquarium. And we decided to make our march sort of later in the afternoon so that people could attend all those earlier events, which are all fantastic in their own right, and still be able to come and march and support science that way.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of beach cleanups happening in the morning all over. And what a great way to celebrate Earth Day, right?
Yeah.
You know, clean up, do something for the Earth, and then come and celebrate science in the afternoon.
Yes.
Excellent. And now this is not, you mentioned there's a few events across the state, and there's one in D.C., but these are not standalone events. This is going to be happening globally.
That's right. There's, what is it now, 514...
They're calling them satellite events all over the world. And I think as of, you know, half an hour ago, this was spread out across, I think, 51 different countries.
Wow. That's incredible. That's got to feel really good to be part of something globally and to see this movement, you know, which wasn't started that long ago, come together and really see the value and appreciation for science globally.
Oh, it's very exciting. And to see scientists and people and communities across the world stand in solidarity with the issues that we face here in the U.S., as well as the same issues are faced by scientists in other countries as well. And to see that kind of public support is just fantastic.
Now, have you been able to reach out to any of the other march organizers in other countries?
We actually have a person that was participating in on our organizing committee here. She was visiting from Germany. She's since returned. And some of us have prepared some statements that will be read from Hawaii at the march in Germany.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. That's a really nice connection. And maybe we can get some of the tourists who are here to support the science march as well.
Well, that would be fantastic. And we've already seen on Facebook and Twitter that there are some people who are visiting from the mainland and other countries as well that are going to be participating in Hawaii marches. And we actually have some Hawaii people who have said, well, I'm not going to be able to participate here, but I'm going to go to the Las Vegas march, or I'm going to go to the D.C. march. And they're going to wave the Hawaii flag on our behalf in those marches as well.
Oh, and that's great. I hope they get some photos of that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm really excited about this march and to talk a little bit more about it and some of the issues around it. But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more about science and marching on Earth Day.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Larson really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a timeout for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool to call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal, and today we are talking about the upcoming March for Science, not just happening here in Honolulu, but across the globe. With us today is Dr. Grant Yamashita and Dr. Helen Spafford, who are helping to organize the march in Honolulu. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we were talking about some of the details for the Honolulu March, and you were saying it takes place at the University of Hawaii. Are they supportive in sponsoring this event?
Absolutely. The University of Hawaii system has actually just endorsed the March for Science in Hawaii, and they've been fabulous in terms of helping us, you know, get access to the space on the campus, and campus security has also gotten involved and wants to help us have a really safe event.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, so much of our scientists here in the island are based there, and so what a perfect headquarters for the march.
Yep, is, you know, because of what we do in terms of research, is really a prime organization to be kind of the lead in this event.
Now, Hawaii is sometimes a standalone place where we have our own local issues here that are a little bit different from mainland United States. Why is this March for Science so important here in Hawaii, and what are some of the big science issues that we have here in the islands?
Hawaii is very unique in a lot of ways compared to the rest of the United States. I mean, we are an island state. We're dealing with, you know, issues like sea level rise, as well as, you know, coral bleaching and acidification of the ocean. So from a marine perspective, because we have such a close connection with the marine environment, we're facing some of these really critical issues. But there are also larger global climate change issues, as well as Hawaii being a very unique place in terms of invasive species. And that's the area I do research in, is in invasive species and their impact on our native plants and systems. And we also have issues in terms of sustainability, where we import, you know, 90% of the food that we eat, and you know, and the energetic cost associated with that, as well as, you know, the challenges we face in producing our own food. So these are important issues and challenges that science has a critical role in monitoring, as well as solving.
Yeah, and I agree with all those points. And, you know, seeing science is helping with these things is sometimes esoteric for people that don't, you know, have that day-to-day connection. For example, for something that you would work on with invasive species, can you give a specific example of how science is helping to tackle that issue?
Yeah, so some of the pests, for example, in agriculture that we deal with, say, for example, fruit flies. And I'm not talking about the little banana flies that you see hanging around your fruit that you have in your kitchen, but the ones that actually, the tophritid fruit flies that really damage our fruit crops and vegetable crops. And so here in Hawaii, we have those, and people that I work with are doing a lot of research to look for non-insecticide-based methods for managing these pests and leading the way in this in terms of how to manage these fruit flies, not just for Hawaii, but for the world.
That is definitely an important issue there, and people need to eat, and that mm-hmm. is critical. What about you, Grant? Do you have any examples that you work with on the day-to-day basis of science helping us here in the islands?
You know, I'm fairly new to science in the islands. I think some of the things that I remember being a graduate student or being a postdoc and always having sort of my eye on what's going on with science in Hawaii, because I grew up here actually, but having lived here for 20 years or so, I think some of the things that I think about are sort of the relationship that I think Native Hawaiians have to the science on the islands. And I think the mainland sort of has similar issues with sort of the Native American populations and their relationship to some of the Dakota Pipeline and some of the other science that's going on there. So I think, we're sort of unique in some ways, but there are sort of parallels that you can find on the mainland as well.
And it's always nice to talk to someone who grew up here who's in the sciences, because as we go up to the different levels of education, we tend to lose some of our local students, particularly in the STEM sciences, engineering, math, technology. What kept you going through the sciences, and what was the one or two things that really helped you to continue your spark and interest?
I think for me, at least personally, it was just something that I always enjoyed growing up. It just turned out that the areas that I wanted to pursue happened to be, the places to do them happened to be off island. Hawaii is sort of disadvantaged in some ways because of its location. We have one major, big major research university. There aren't enough positions probably for all the people who'd love to do science here. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a lot of places to do them. It's great if people would come back and sort of, re-engage with the scientific community here.
Well, I think that's definitely changing. There's a lot more opportunity for research. Hawaii is such a unique place in that we have so many endemic species, and we have a natural living laboratory all around us in our reef environments and native forests, and there's so much opportunity there. Participating in this march and helping to advocate and promote the march, I'm sure you're dealing with a lot of communications and sharing the messages. Why do you think science communications is so important to not only scientists but to the public? Why do scientists need to communicate their research?
Well, as I mentioned before, much of the research that we do is actually publicly funded through taxpayer dollars, through different grants and programs that flow from taxpayers through the government and back to us. And I think it's fair to communicate to the public, what we've been finding and what the value of that is to the taxpayer. Most scientists I know are motivated out of the desire to do something good and make the world a better place, either through conservation or new discovery or problem solving. And so we need to let people know that we're not just these nerds in lab coats and with our pocket protectors sitting there with our beakers, but that we're real people and that we are really passionate about what we do, and we want to do it for all the right reasons.
Well, I'd just like to point out on that note that both of you, as my guests today, are not wearing pocket protectors or lab coats.
I left mine in the car.
You are sporting a very cool March for Science t-shirt.
Yes, I am.
So that's a really cool logo. It's a nice looking shirt. Are those going to be available, and who designed that?
Well, they were available. Okay. So part of our fundraising efforts was to have the shirts for sale that unfortunately the sale ended last week, and we won't be selling anymore. But our the National March has a logo. And it turns out that a lot of the satellite marches sort of made their own variations of that national march logo based on, you know, where they're located. And so our graphics designer on our team, you know, came up with this cool sort of adding a lei as part of the one of the electron traces, I guess, and the islands. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, maybe people can get the Hawaii t-shirt version on the black market or something. Yeah. I want to go back to the science communications issue for a second. Has communicating your science and doing this shifted your perspective in how you do your research or how you share your message?
I think for me, it being involved in this and seeing other members of the community, not just scientists, actually want to come and help organize, and hearing them say, yeah, we value this, that's increased my awareness that people really do want to know what scientists are doing. And it's been encouraging to me to be much more engaged with the community and a desire to actually talk about the kind of research that I do.
Yeah, so the largest science organization in the United States, AAAS, mm-hmm. you know, they're supporting the National March. And a few days before the march, they're going to have a webinar. And the title of the webinar is Advocating for Science Beyond the March. And, you know, it's interesting that most of their focus on the march is actually about communicating science to the public. Because I think that one of the things that scientists are sort of understanding now is that we could do a better job of communicating science.
And you know. AAAS, for those of us that don't follow science community, what is that? American Association
for the Advancement of Science, right. Yes. And they publish the journal Science, you know, which is a very good journal. One of the other things that I noticed today, I was on the PLOS One website, which is an open access journal online, and they have a tag cloud of most important terms, I guess, on their website. And science communication is the biggest topic. So it's something
great.
That a lot of people are interested in.
Yeah, it's certainly becoming something that people in the sciences and outside the sciences are more aware of. There's a lot of training courses, and through different programs like AAAS and COSI, that, you know, you have that capability to do that training. Are you seeing that amongst the younger generation of scientists or the students that are coming up now in the sciences at the universities? Is there a different value or focus on science communications?
I think so. Different universities across the country are actually having programs explicitly for science communication, and many programs require students to take courses in science communication as part of their whole academic profile. So they're not just learning about how to do science and how to use the lingo of their particular discipline, but they're being taught how to communicate it. And that was something that really didn't happen when I was an undergraduate.
And so how do you empower students to develop their skills?
Well, one of the things that I really try to focus on in my classes with my students is giving them opportunities to communicate and to learn to share ideas in an effective way, either through classroom discussions or presentations. And with my graduate students, you know, really engaging as often as they can with the media.
You know, when I was a postdoc at Arizona State, I worked on this online encyclopedia of the embryo. It's called the Embryo Project. And one of the courses that we had for the project was getting undergrads and graduate students to write articles for our encyclopedia. And that was, a great way for them to start thinking about how to convey you know, scientific ideas, historical ideas, in written form for lots of people to see. And so I really advocate people learning how to write really well, communicating very well through words to sort of get their message out.
Absolutely. It's such an important topic and something that is a skill that's acquired. Yeah. You know, it's not just there. And what about for the public that want to maybe engage a little bit more in the sciences? What are some publications that you think are, you know, user-friendly that really cover a broad variety of science topics?
There's magazines like Scientific American and the Smithsonian mm-hmm. that often have really great science articles. Some of them actually have come out with some articles on, you know, some of the newer genetic technologies like CRISPR and those sorts of techniques that you know really have the opportunity to revolutionize the way that we do a lot of different things, including pest management. And so there's those. One of the challenges when we go to the internet for information about science is looking for credible sources of information. So that's one thing that I really try to challenge my students is to evaluate the source of the information and make sure that it's coming from a respected and credible venue.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, here in Hawaii too, we have so many unique science organizations that have blogs and put out information about the research that they're doing. And I also feel like those are a great opportunity to learn about the science happening here locally.
Yeah. Something I like to do is listen to podcasts. And mm-hmm. there are actually a lot of really great science podcasts that you know, talk about current events, make it very understandable. There, you know, I listen to some physics podcasts, and I'm nowhere near a expert in physics, but they make it easy for even me to understand.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, when we want to learn about marine science issues, right. The yes. All Things Marine Radio
yes.
Show.
Yes.
And what about, you know, we've talked about sort of science communications and science education at the college level, but what about those earlier years, the K through 12? You know, there's been a lot about science curriculum and really emphasizing a stronger curriculum within the math and sciences. Have you had any experience working with teachers or educators at that level and making sure that there's fundamental work being done on educating our future scientists?
Yes, CTAR has a number of programs that work both with CTAR is the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And we have a number of programs in our college where people are engaging with K through 12. One of them is the Genius Program, where students, children come in and they get hands-on experience doing things like DNA extractions and learning about different scientific topics. And then there's other programs around termite biology where there's the teachers are given educational materials that they can use with their students to teach scientific principles with within the classroom, using termites as a model. And we also have some wonderful extension agents that also engage through our 4-H programs as well with educators.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, if they need more termites, they should come over to my place.
Okay.
That's great. And what about you, Grant? Have you had a lot of experience dealing with K through 12, or do you have any plans to engage with educators or students at that level?
Yeah, I do actually have friends who are science teachers here locally. I think one of the things that we often talk about is why students don't continue, in math or the sciences. And I think a lot of it has to do with the notion of failure. I think maybe kids, you know, we don't teach kids how to fail very well. Mm-hmm. And science is all about failing. We don't publish our failed research, but, you know, more often than not, you know, a lot of the things that we do don't actually work the way we want them to or expected them to. And I think getting the notion out that failure is actually a part of science and that, you know, pursuing it because it's awesome is you know, is a good way to go, even though, you know, you might not be great at all aspects of it, I think.
I think one of the challenges, too, in the K through 12 arena is that I think there are a lot of really great teachers out there who would love to do more in science. But over the years, there have been so many cutbacks in funding that it's really hard to implement hands-on activities for kids. And that's where kids get really engaged in the scientific process, when they can actually do science. It's one thing to learn about the facts and the history and how it works from a book. It's a whole nother thing to actually get in there and get dirty and see it happen and actually gather the data yourself.
Couldn't agree with you more. And it's such a shame because there's so many amazing field trip opportunities the sciences here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about science in Hawaii and the march.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking about the March for Science and science here in Hawaii. With us is Helen Spafford and Grant Yamashita, who are both scientists participating and advocating for the March of Scientists. So we kind of got off on a tangent there talking about education in Hawaii and some of the sciences, but I want to get more on a personal level in terms of your own experiences and relationships with science. So when you're not advocating and working with students, what kind of science are you doing in your day-to-day life?
So I'm working on a number of projects with different people. One of the projects is with fruit flies and fruit fly pest management.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also got some projects underway looking at mosquitoes here in Hawaii and looking at we will be looking at different ways of trapping and managing mosquitoes here in the state. But one of the things we really need to get a good handle on is what mosquitoes we have here and where they're distributed. So we're involved in generating some distribution maps of mosquitoes in the state.
That's such a timely, important issue. Mm-hmm. With all the Zika pandemonium that had come out. That's something that is definitely top of mind concern for me, and where I'm glad that there's science to do the research there.
Yeah, and there's a number of people working on mosquitoes in the state. Mine is just one small part of the picture. But yeah, obviously we are concerned about the role that mosquitoes will have here in the state in not only human vector disease, but also avian malaria, which has been a significant source of decline in the native Hawaiian birds.
Mm. Interesting. And Grant, what about you? What are you working on when you're not advocating for science?
I'm usually working on changing my son's diapers.
science to that isn't
yes,
itself, I'm
yes.
sure.
No, I'm interested in sort of the intersection between science and technology and the humanities as well. My interests have always been looking at the history and sort of conceptual issues in science. So I'm quite fond of the history and philosophy of science, and more specifically, the history and philosophy of biology. But that also took me to understanding sort of the role of technology in science, in the scientific humanities. I was a visitor at the Marine Biological Laboratory out in Woods Hole for for a bit, and I spent some time with their informatics team out there. And so these were people associated with the library who were doing science, but on that team was a person who had their library science degree, mm-hmm. and a bunch of IT people, software engineers, and computer scientists. So these are people doing science who weren't necessarily scientists, but they were able to analyze large amounts of data using, you know, computer algorithms and stuff like that. So I think that's sort of the stuff that interests me today, you know, how to manage scientific data. I think that's one of the big issues going forward nowadays.
Sure, that's a huge problem to tackle. I mean, it's not, you know, people, I don't think, realize the amount of cataloging of data. You know, it's one thing to go out and do a project and collect your data, but making data publicly available, storing that data, especially as the technology develops and it becomes larger and larger, how does that happen?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we're discussing education and science education. It's not just people, you know, we don't need students who are interested in the biology or the physics. You know, science can also be, you know, these computer scientists who are interested in statistics, who are interested in large-scale data analyses, people who are interested in computers, you know, they're that's doing a lot of really interesting scientific work as well.
So that brings up an interesting question in terms of what you see for the future of science and where we need to concentrate more of our efforts. Is it in the data and the technology, or where do you personally feel like you'd like to see some of the disciplines be more focused?
Wow, that's a big question. I think you will get a different answer depending on what kind of scientist you talk to, because I think the wonderful thing about the scientific process is that anytime we learn something new, it raises a whole bunch of other questions. And we, my experience anyway, is that we realize, or I realize, how much there is we still have to find out. So, So in answer to your question, I would say we need effort everywhere. We are pushing the boundaries of our knowledge in all disciplines across the board. I think the main challenge today, quite frankly, is this interconnectivity between different disciplines, because we have this tendency to get so focused in our one little area. And so, for example, I know computer scientists, but I have no way of understanding what computer scientists do, because that's just so out of my sphere of expertise. And yet we need each other. Mm-hmm. And increasingly we're having these projects where we have to collaborate with each other and work with each other to really generate these outcomes that are of value to society. So, so the big challenge then is basically for scientists to be able to work outside their specific area of expertise, but not necessarily have to know everything else. There's just too much to know.
Yeah.
That's just my two cents.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, saying March for Science, well, you know, that's so broad. There's so many disciplines mm-hmm. in the sciences, that some related, some not. So it's really like, you know, a list of probably 100,000 different disciplines under the sciences mm-hmm. that we're marching for. And I couldn't agree with you more in terms of being able to have more flexibility in terms of interdisciplinarity and bringing things together.
Yeah.
How about you, Grant?
No, I totally agree. You know, I'm someone who's, you know, my own research has always been sort of the intersection of the humanities, of science, of technology. So, you know, and science more and more has to be collaborative. You know, it's almost impossible to be a one person science show these days. And so, you know, having to interact with the, you know, the population geneticist down the hall or the computer scientist in the other building. If you want to do really interesting research, it has to be that way nowadays. Yeah.
So, going back to the march, are we covering our disciplines? Has the committee, organizing committee, reached out to different types of scientists to make sure that we have a good representation?
We have tried very hard, and we have put out feelers and connections to people in the medical sciences, including medical practitioners, and we have folks from that arena coming. We have connected with the physical scientists as well as the earth scientists, as well as the natural and life scientists, as well as the science communicators, computer scientists. We've basically
covered your bases.
We've tried to.
But
what I want to emphasize, though, is that the March for Science isn't a march for scientists. The March for Science is a march for people who do science, but also it's everybody who values science and wants to see what scientists do continue in our society.
I think it's important for everybody to be there personally, especially children.
Yes.
You know, the students need to see support for science.
Yeah, we, you know, there's, I think, something like $70 billion in the federal budget that's non-defense spending. You know, and a portion of that is obviously for science, but I don't think most people know what is actually being funded or how it affects them in their lives. And, mm-hmm. you know, but once we tell them, you know, it's helped develop your lactose-free milk or your Google search algorithms or something like that, you know, I think then people start to see that, oh, this march is for me too. It's not just, you know, something sort of esoteric, yeah.
So with that note, you mentioned that there'd be some activities and programs and, you know, that it is a family-friendly event. So what's going to be available for the kids?
So we do have a face painting booth that's going to be there. And then there are other people who are bringing some games as well for children to play. And there'll be lots of things for them to see as well.
Good. Excellent. And so what happens after the march? Are there plans to continue this advocacy, or are there other events that will be happening once the march is done?
Yes.
We have been talking about that among the members of the organizing committee, and yes, the plan is to continue the advocacy. We don't know exactly what the shape of that will be at this point, and you know, given that we have a global network now that's been established, we plan on maintaining a voice in that network, and as well as maintaining the networks here in Hawaii. But really what we see the march as doing is being a launching point for future advocacy. And we're bringing together people from all different disciplines that may not otherwise, you know, connect with each other, as well as different organizations. So we have a lot of nonprofit organizations, as well as, you know, the education and the research organizations going to be present at these events. And you know, so we're creating this critical mass of an engaged community.
And that's great to know too in terms of sponsorship. So who is sponsoring the event?
We have a continuing list of sponsors. Every day it grows. We have the Nature Conservancy, we have the Sierra Club,
Bishop Museum,
Hawaii Public Health Association has endorsed us. The Queen's Health System has also endorsed us.
Oh, fantastic.
Then, you know, you can go to our website basically and see the whole list. But yeah, we have, of course, University of Hawaii and Urgent Care Hawaii.
So you have a nice variety of sponsorship. So you said the website, and we've referenced it a couple times. Mm-hmm. What is that website, and where do people go to find more details, more information, and how to participate?
Okay, so the website address is www.marchforsciencehawaii, all one word, .com.
Okay, and if they Google search March for Science Hawaii, I'm sure it'll come up.
Yeah, it should come up. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And so let's go through those details one more time. You know, let's drill it home. We want people to come out. It's a family-friendly event. Where and when and how?
Yeah, so it'll be on Saturday, April 22nd, Earth Day. The event itself will start at 3 p.m. and it will involve speakers and music. And then the actual march itself will start probably around 4 o'clock, where the actual walking part of the event. And then afterward, there will be activities and informational tables. The food trucks will be there. So, you know, we're seeing starting at 3 and ending 6 or 7. Yeah.
Excellent. Love your Earth on Earth Day. Do a beach cleanup. Yeah. Then participate in the science. Who knows? Maybe we'll even have some celebrity marchers there and maybe celebrity scientists, I mean.
Well, definitely celebrity scientists. but yeah, it would be great if we can, you know, see some celebrities there as well.
And I just want to end sort of on a really forward-looking note in terms of the students that you have, that you work with, both at the university or college level and from our K-12 students that are looking around and seeing all of these scientists and community stand up for science and have an interest in pursuing science. What advice do you give that generation in terms of moving forward with a science career?
I think the key for me is, you know, find your passion and follow it, and then listen to your teachers at school. I have to say, I'm just going to do a shout out to my high school biology teacher, Janet Cooper. She saw something in me, I don't know what, when I was 15 years old, and just really encouraged me. And because of her, I pursued a career in the sciences. And, you know, so she just inspired me to do well in school and encouraged me to go to college. And so here I am. And, yeah, so listen to your teachers.
You know, I love that because I don't think science teachers get enough credit because it is a hard job.
It is a hard job.
Yes. And in terms of giving shout-outs, I have to say one of my very close friends, Mackenzie Manning, is a KCC science educator, mm-hmm. and she is fantastic. And when I see her work with her students, she's definitely an inspiration. So shout out to science teachers everywhere.
Yes, every day.
Yeah. Grant, what about you? What's your last parting words of wisdom?
I think like Helen, I think, you know, finding one's passion is sort of the key, you know, whether it's, you know, love of computers or love of being in the dirt or love of the ocean. You know, I think if you ask any scientist, they'll always have the thing that keyed them in mm-hmm. to their love of science, you know, and their passion. And, you know, I think that's all we can ask for, you know, the future scientists to do is to be passionate about what they're interested in.
Yeah, it's a real privilege to be able to follow my passion and do science. And I'm grateful for it every day.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And I do think that's important in terms of advice and following your passion. And certainly the ocean provides mm-hmm. a lot of that for a lot of people. Yeah. And we're lucky here in Hawaii to be surrounded by it. Let's recap that website one more time for everyone. March for Science on Earth Day, Saturday, April 22nd, right?
Yes. That's right.
Okay, what's that website?
It's March for Science Hawaii, all one word, marchforsciencehawaii.com.
Okay, so marchforsciencehawaii.com, check it out on social media, check it out on the web, and most importantly, check it out the day of. That's
yes.
really important.
We'd love to have you there.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you for coming out on the show today and sharing all of your knowledge and passion and for all your time that you've dedicated to putting the March for Science together. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, and I'd like to thank all of the other organizers for the march. There's a huge team and they are volunteers and they've spent hours and hours pulling this event together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And a thank you to Alicia for helping to organize the show today. Thank you to everybody, all the volunteers, and in advance, everyone who's going to participate in the march. Whether you're a scientist or not, come out and celebrate what science does for people and the many ways that science serves our communities around the world. And especially on Earth Day, this is a very poignant message. I'm Carly Weiner, and now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.